You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 102.7 FM.
Yesterday, September 11th, marked 36 years since Pinochet seized power in a military coup in Chile, a catastrophe whose human toll exceeded that of the other September 11th. September 11, 1973 forever changed the life of Claudio Duran. His film, Archaeology of Memory, documents that change, but more than that, it documents how he pieced together the fragments of his memories of torture into an artistic triumph of his enduring humanity. Claudio Duran will be in Vancouver this coming Friday, September 18th, for a showing of his film, for a live performance of his musical composition, which is at the core of his film, and for an installation display of related artwork. But this morning, we managed to reach Claudio at his home in California. Good morning, Claudio, and welcome to Vancouver Cooperative Radio.
Thank you for having me. Thank you. Good morning.
Before the coup, you were a musician. You say in the film that music at that time was married to what was going on in the country. Could you give us a sense of that synthesis of music and social change?
Well, what have happened during the 60s is that a woman, her name was Violeta Parra, was able to, I think he... For the people in the United States or in America, she was kind of a figure like Pete Seeger, somebody who was investigating the folk music, but also talking about the problems that the people had in the communities where they sang this music. So it was a music that was related with the social issues of the country, and it became very, very, very popular in Chile. And at the time that Allende assumed power in 1970, that type of songs, that type of narrative of looking in the country, looking outside Santiago, the main city, for the country that had been lost in a way or erased by the elites of Chile, that finally inundated Santiago, and it became very, very popular. It was very exciting music at the same time, because you rescue all these instruments and rhythms from the northern part of Chile, from the southern part of Chile, and so it was played in pan pipes, different kinds of Andean instruments and drums, and it was very exciting music for the youth, and it became kind of a aesthetic bone of the Allende's government. It became very, very popular, and so me, as a young man who was interested in music, I was totally drawn to it, with thousands of people who really loved this kind of new type of music, although it was old.
And in the film, there's a shot near the beginning of the sheer joyfulness of people parading, and almost as if they're floating in the streets, one gets a sense. And then came the coup. What happened to you?
Well, Allende's government was in power for 3 years, and it was... It was like Alice in the Wonderland, because a lot of the things that have been there forever, like, what can I say? For example, this music, before Allende, didn't have no airplay, or you couldn't get into the radio. It was very difficult, and all of a sudden, all the musicians and the artists are in main TV, they're on the radio, and every political, all the rallies that took place, the musicians were there playing the music. It was incredibly exciting, and all of a sudden, you know, after 3 years, there was the coup d'etat, and the coup d'etat was supported by the United States, and all of a sudden, you know, that ended, but it was just like turning off the light. All of a sudden, nothing could be played anymore on the radio. People by the thousands were taken into concentration camps or open stadiums, and people began to get killed. The main singers, either in prison in concentration camps or assassinated. So it was a terrible situation. I, as a young man, of course, couldn't play the music anymore, and very soon I was taken in prison. And I ended up in a concentration camp for a whole year there. Yeah.
And you were taken first to Via Grimaldi in Santiago, Chile, which was used by the Pinochet regime as a torture prison. What had Via Grimaldi been before that?
Well, Villa Grimaldi was a beautiful villa that was in the slope of the Andean, on the outskirts of Santiago, and it has been in many things. The villa first was a house of the people who took care of that huge state in the, I think, in the 19th century. And it was sold many times, and it was an upper-class restaurant, it was a private club, and finally the secret police of Pinochet, which was kind of a Gestapo, you know, bought it, and they turned it into a torture house, an experimental torture house, really. It became the school for training their people and bringing them nationally. So they brought people there to Villa Grimaldi from Santiago and from all Chile. People were brought by planes, by helicopters to Villa Grimaldi, and it became the center, torture center of the dictatorship for many years, actually. Yeah.
And at the end, in the last period of the Pinochet regime, did they, after using it as this horrible place, what did they try to do with it?
Well, as you know, one of the big problems, I don't know if you people know, but one of the big problems after Pinochet left power is that the negotiations to make a new democratic government in Chile, one of the terrible things was that they negotiated the past. The newcomers, the new democratic figures, they decided that they were not going to bring total justice to Chile, and so those people who have participated in torture and the main personnel, let me call it, of Villa Grimaldi was never brought to justice. And right before they left, the dictatorship left, they destroyed the villa. Actually, they were going to sell it to a so they were going to build apartments. They were going to build apartments there for people to live. And so, but they destroyed it, they demolished it, and then people from ex-political prisoners and people from the neighborhood fought a huge fight with the authorities in that were assuming the democratic process, and they rescued the place, and they made a memory park. It's the first and the only memory park in Chile that remembers what happened to us and thousands of Chileans.
And the film you've made and the suite of music you've composed both have the title Archaeology of Memory. Can you explain why you chose this word, archaeology?
Well, you know, I was reading, at some point I was a student reading a lot of anthropology, and I realized that people who look at the past, and as we try to assemble the past from ancient past, we have only fragments, and through the fragments are we able to speak. That was one thing, and when I went to Villa Grimaldi to do some research to write my suite, I found that things weren't there anymore. There were all these pieces, because certain pieces of the demolition were used for the park to create monuments in the park itself. So they are fragments, and so through the fragments, I thought was the only way for me to speak. Second, I thought that a total recall of the past is not really desirable. I didn't want to go back to Villa Grimaldi and to be alive again, to be the whole thing. I think in a way, it would have been very difficult for me to see the whole edifice there in front of me and all the places that were used for us to be tortured. So I thought, well, the only thing that I have are these fragments. My memory is fragmented as well, and a total recall is not desirable. Therefore, I created a name, because I thought that through that name I could, will be the metaphor that will, allow me to do the work that I did.
In the film, at one point, you say that music saved you. I mean, through the horrors that you experienced at Via Grimaldi, at the other concentration camps where you were taken, and then finally you were exiled, forced to leave the country by the regime. But you said that music saved you.
Well, in many aspects, because while I was in Via Grimaldi, you know, not all the time I was able to sing, and we were blindfolded in these boxes, and then there was another man who sang there too, and he sang very softly, and I sang with, and we remember songs, and when the guards weren't very close, we sang. Then as I went to the concentration camps were more open, and I became a singer, really, in the concentration camps, and everybody knows me who were in this huge concentration camps with 300, 400, 500 people, knew me as a singer because I kept on singing. Then I was exiled to Vancouver, and then I remember having my first job in the Holiday Inn in Vancouver. After like 4 or 5 days, I have arrived to Vancouver. And I went to wash dishes on a night shift for 500. There has been a cocktail, and there were 500 people in this cocktail. And we were washing, and around 4 o'clock, it dawned on me that I wasn't going to wash dishes all my life. That it was incredible, difficult task. You know, I was very young, and there were thousands of things to be washed. And I said, no, I'm not going to do this. I didn't come here, you know, to exile, to wash dishes. So I made a group there. And you know, I trained a few people, and we were a quartet and sometimes a quintet, and we became the Chilean Singers, I think we were called. And we began playing at Vancouver, in the universities, and we in colleges, and we made cafe concerts, and I start traveling in Canada, and I became really, really, you know, I began making a life as a musician, and then I came to the United States later on to form a group, and I became a professional musician. It's not that I became a professional musician. I could able to really, really do what I was born to do, which is to play.
Your musical creativity in exile incorporated new elements, particularly jazz, which originally you didn't find very comfortable as a form of musical communication. What in the end attracted you to jazz?
Well, you know, on Sundays, there was a program on KPFA radio here from 1 o'clock to 4 o'clock, and they played jazz. They still have it. And on Sundays, you know, I was in the house doing chores in the house, doing my things, and then that was the music. And at the beginning, I put it on. It kind of bothered me at the beginning, but later, as things, you know, as years went by, it started to sound really, really good. And then because I was traveling in different places in the United States and playing in different places, I always encountered jazz musicians, and I always encountered jazz. And at some point, something happened in my life when I was working with some musicians. A musician, and it's interesting that you asked me this question, because I met the bass player yesterday. I was rehearsing at the jazz school here in Berkeley, and the guy said, well, Kike should take a solo. And I said, well, you know, I don't take solos. In my music, in folk music, we don't really take solos in the type of music that I play, so I don't know how to solo. And he said, no, you know. And then so they gave me the opportunity. I began soloing with my quenas, with my flutes, and then I could solo. And so after that, I kind of began to embrace that kind of music, but all because also it gave me the opportunity to have a second voice as a musician. If, you know, my first voice is Spanish, then I learned English. It's just like the same thing. It opened a door, a tremendous possibilities for me to mix what I have as a folk musician from Chile, and then in this new idiom. And it has been an incredible journey for me. It's been beautiful.
In the film, you present also the voices of some other friends who, artists, poets, writers, painters, who were tortured as you were in the prisons. Do you think the way each of you recall your memories in the same sense, or there's quite a variation, important, interesting variations?
Well, when I began investigating these issues, I thought, you know, that of course I wasn't the only one who went through, and so I began looking for my friends, and then I found friends that I'd been in concentration camps, or people who I knew that they had been in concentration camps who were artists, and I interviewed them. And there is something that we say all the time, that, you know, that time and space are not related with experience. You know, we go through times and we visit the same places, but we have such different take on what we experience in those spaces. So that was really important for me, especially even though that I've known these things, you know, that gender marks you in a very specific way. I had no idea how profound the idea of being a woman in these male spaces, which are the torture centers, was for them. And it was really revealing to me. So I was so glad that I was able to interview a poet, Anita Maria Moreira, as well as Nubia Becker, who is a writer, and you know, to illuminate this other side, this incredible male space of what it meant to be there. And so that's what I learned with them, as well as with the other person, Mr. Guillermo Núñez, who was older than me. I was 20, and probably Guillermo was 45 at that time. He had a great career. He was the head of the Museum of Modern Art in Chile, and so when he was taken to these places, his whole life, his whole career was totally destroyed, and the weight of that, he felt very different. For me, it was different. You know, when you are young, life is totally different. So I learned profound things with interviewing them.
There's a both a heartbreaking personal tragedy and an unanticipated triumph, I thought, at the conclusion of the film, which takes place around your musical performance of the composition Archaeology of Memory in the ruins of now a park at Via Grimaldi itself. Could you just touch a bit on that, both tragedy and triumph?
Well, what have happened is that I've created a piece here in the United States by myself, and I thought that the piece was never going to travel to Chile. It was very, very expensive to take it there. It's a music composition that uses 12 musicians, including folkloric musicians from Chile that play pan pipes, and then a jazz ensemble. And how, you know, we didn't have the money to do that. And so I always thought that the piece was going to be here. But at some point, they inaugurated the park. In the park itself, they inaugurated a theater, and they made a theater there. And for the inauguration, they called me because they knew that I was doing this work. And so I went there with all the musicians, and it was a triumphant night because not only thousands of people came. I thought nobody was. I thought a few people were going to come, but the president of Chile as well came, and the president of Chile, Bachelet, had been at the Via Grimaldi with me at the same time. So what's incredibly triumph? The tragedy for me, I don't know if you're referring to that, is that my mother, who had been so instrumental for a lot of the things that I did in my life, you know, just to be, for example, all the support that she gave me to be a musician. She passed away a week before that event. It was a very triumphant event for me as a musician to come back to Chile and have all this press and thousands of people watching the music, the president coming, and my mom wasn't there, because my mom appears in the film. I interview her several times, so she's a central figure in the film, and I really want her to be there, but that was not possible, yeah.
I thank you very much, Claudio, for speaking with us this morning, and wish you a safe and easy journey back to Vancouver.
Oh, thank you very much. I'm so glad that you called me. I feel that Vancouver was such a beautiful place for me to come at the beginning of my exile, and I'm so excited that I am bringing the film there.
I've been speaking with Claudio Duran, who also has performed under the name Quique Cruz. He's creator of the film Archaeology of Memory and a musical composition in three movements with the same title. The film is going to be shown on Friday, September 18th at the King Edward Campus at VCC, Vancouver City Community College, which is at 1155 East Broadway. That's just west of Clark Drive. The film will be followed by a live performance of Claudio's musical suite, Archaeology of Memory. It's going to be performed by his quintet, Kierama, and there also will be an exhibition of accompanying what are called gigantographics, large graphics. All of this starts at 7:30 p.m., and it's part of the Latin American Film Festival, which began on Thursday evening and continues till Sunday, September 20th. For a program and information on tickets, you can go to the website for the Latin American Film Festival. It is vlaff.org.